Just one comment.
Okay.
One final comment. All what I've said is just my subjective opinion. Please read the material online.
Hey, yo. And today at Uncle Data, we have Yev Gamper, who's working as staff decision scientist, if I'm not mistaken, at Vinted. And so for people who are listening, you know, before in like in Lithuanian, so he's not the first time guest at this podcast, but last time we talked about experimentation. But this time we're going to talk about, you know, beyond senior engineers. So basically, you know, we're going to discuss things about, you know, choosing your career path when you're reaching, you know, the senior role and, you know, where you should, where what are the possibilities, you know, and how to define, you know, where to go to people management or, you know, to, let's say, staff and other roles. But of course, before we dive to the, you know, the whole conversation, so let's talk about Yev and how he decided, you know, that staff or like, you know, IC path is was the one for him.
Yeah, sounds good. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on the show. Glad to be here again. Yeah, so my path, first, maybe a bit about the motivation, why I'm here, particularly the Lithuanian context, and I will be speaking here as part of the Lithuanian community, and not necessarily engineering, but maybe data science, decision science, data analytics. Can speak of all of engineering. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because I think we need to have more individual contributor tracks at different companies. At the moment, what I see happen a lot in some of the Lithuanian companies is that you get to the stage of senior data scientist, senior data analyst, and then you have sort of no option other than becoming a team lead and then a director and then director of directors, et cetera, et cetera. And the fun times end there. But a bit about my context. So I've went kind of through this very traditional science-y path where I went for master's, then I went for PhD, and after PhD I went to work on very science statistics heavy things like climate modeling, remote sensing, and doing that in a private company in a startup in London. There was an individual contributor, but in a startup these things are really mixed. You're all things at the same time when it's just 10 people in the company. So you do pick up a lot of things. And then I went to Vinted. At first at Vinted, I worked as a team lead for machine learning engineering team. So I was a team lead of 12 individual contributors at the highest point. And then I transitioned to being a staff decision scientist at Vinted, which I've been now, turns out, for more than for close to 2 years now? Yeah, for 2 years now as a staff decision scientist at Vinted, primarily working in the area of experimentation. So I'm not doing that all of that work alone. That would have been impossible. I have an awesome team working with me. We are a cross-functional team. So I can focus on a lot of other things while my engineering colleague, Ginteras, can focus on other aspects of the team. And then we have a few more engineers, and we have also to data and decision scientists working with us. But other than that, I work as a staff nowadays. So that's, and yeah, the reason I guess why I went for this staff position is that I really liked working at the intersection of kind of deep technical challenges intertwined with company culture, with product problems. And yeah, it's really that intersection that I think makes IC path interesting, because as you become people manager, you kind of have to give up a bit of your technical depth purely because your calendar is full of meetings most of the time.
Surprise, you know. Okay. But let's say, you know, right, you were a team lead, right, and you made a switch, right, then to a staff, you know. So what were your reasoning? Only because of, let's say, you know, dropping that technical area, like, you know, technical responsibilities more? What drove you that path?
I think I've always known during my PhD, as I was going to different conferences, be it NeurIPS or ICML, or I didn't go to KDD, but I went to a few workshops, like Summer School of Gaussian Processes in in Sheffield, UK, and there were a lot of data scientists and scientists from Amazon Research, Amazon Science now, I think they're called. And you could really see the depth of the knowledge that some of the data scientists there had, and some of them were principal scientists. And you would speak with them, and they know a lot about both the product side, have this very practical mindset, but also have very good intuition from statistics point of view, from data science point of view, where and what kind of assumptions do we need to care for? Is this bias that we introduce in our statistical model, does this bias matter in this case, or does it not matter in this case? And that kind of depth of at the intersection of science and product, I thought was very interesting, very exciting. So already at that time, I think the idea was forming in my head that I want to go into an individual contributor path. And that's, by the way, also perhaps to the audience, I would really encourage to go to these international conferences and summer schools. It's like crazy good opportunity to meet these people and to realize what's possible individual contributor track. Like last week, we were with Vinted data science and analytics team. We were at KDD in Los Angeles, which is one of the bigger data science conferences at the intersection of industry and academia. So you can find people from academia there, but also talks from Airbnb, Spotify, Amazon, you name it. And there would be like principal scientists from Amazon presenting their talk about how they use bandits in the recommendation system. And they would talk both about the engineering side and the scientific side. And they would kind of delve into, here's this assumption, it matters. And this assumption, you can forget about it, don't worry about it in practice. And here's how we engineer the whole thing. And here's how the stats supposed to work with engineering. And here's how we fix it. And you listen to it and you're like, yeah, this is depth. This is cool. I like this.
Okay. So my then, you know, assumptions goes, you know, that when you're becoming a people manager, right, you care about the product, but then you're the other half, right, goes to the people, you know, nurturing them, helping them grow. So mm-hmm. It's like, you know, both parts, like IC and people, you know, have the same, you know, like the product, you know, but that part other difference. Okay. You mentioned, you know, principle, right? So I assume it also depends on the company, you know, about those levels, right?
Yes.
Like I assume you have way more in-depth knowledge about the leveling and whatnot, because for me the staff role was quite new, and I heard about it when I was at the Home2Go at that point. And then, you know, like went to different, and it was quite rare. In some cases they didn't even have. I remember at Twig there was one principal engineer, I think, but was a rare, no, but I didn't go into details what he does and whatnot. So could you elaborate more, you know, about the level?
Yeah, this is a very good point. And I have to be explicit here. I don't have all the knowledge and all the right answers. I just want this discussion to get started. And what I project through this microphone here right now, it's only my own biases and things I've accumulated through personal experience and reading a whole bunch of stuff and just talking to people. But generally, there are a few nice books, and maybe we'll include them afterwards in the show notes. But after a senior individual contributor role, if your company is big enough, you can go either to people management role, or you can go to further into individual contributor role. So that would be staff. And then at Vinted, we also have senior staff. And then we have principal, and that's depending on the function. So in engineering, there are more of them. They have more of these roles. Their scope is bigger. And then some other companies. So for Meta, they have even more than that. Then they have like distinguished engineer, distinguished science, and then fellow scientist, and so on and so forth. So some of the bigger AI people that people sometimes follow and look where they go, oh, they were at Google, now they're at Meta, whatever. They're usually at like IC9 to IC11, and staff, depending on the organization, would be from IC6 to IC8, maybe IC7. But these are huge organizations, right? There are like 60,000 people working there. So we have to normalize it by the size of the organization, by the size of the function. But this just says that with how in those big organizations, the scope of the kind of problems that you solve can grow. So I was speaking with a recruiter once at Meta, and they were saying like, yeah, for IC9, you start to work on open source projects or something like that. So you're not only having impact on your team, you're not only having impact now on some business unit or domain, but you're expected to have impact on industry-wide projects. But again, maybe I talked with a recruiter, maybe they were wrong. I don't know, go figure. The thing is, those things are there and they're cool. So let's have more of them.
That's true. You mentioned, you know, about the scopes, you know, let's say, you know, expanding. So I assume, you know, like how it goes with people management part, right? You go a lead, you have like a team, you know, you like head director, whatever, right? You get the multiple teams, you know, and then, you know, above you get, you know, like multiple this and it branches out. So how it goes with the project scopes, at least from your experience or what you have seen?
Yeah. So if you're a decision scientist, in a product team, you will be focused on the work of that product team. You might have time and you should have opportunity to work on initiatives that might be bigger, where you're adding value to maybe the whole function. Maybe you were doing this analysis every single time and then you decided to automate it and then you just create a repo and people can reuse it. And then maybe you can grow in seniority in the same product team. Your impact so in that product team could also grow. But then what means by scope is that when you go to staff level or even higher, you're expected to make then impact not just at the team level, but at the domain level. So let's say there is a whole domain of recommender systems, et cetera, or generally search recommendation systems, et cetera. And then in my case, I'm expected to have impact across the whole of decision science at Vinted. So primarily related to experimentation. And in my belief, almost a lot of 80% of decision science is supposed to relate around experimentation. But this is a separate topic. My scope there is really broad. So I'm expected to work on enabling decision scientists and product teams, not just in a particular domain, not just particular team, but all teams. So I need to make sure that they have the right knowledge. I need to make sure that the tooling that we build in the long term is the kind of tooling they need, and also not only solves their problems from the product point of view, but does it statistically correct. And I really have to make this trade-off accurately. Okay, this scientific assumption, statistical assumption matters for product team when they do hypothesis testing across the whole business, and this one does not matter. Or this one we can sacrifice now and build the solution for the whole business as it is now and then fix it later. So it's kind of making these trade-offs at a larger scale. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, okay, makes sense. So since you mentioned a lot of things about trade-off, and again, I'm going back to the overlap, right, of the product and people and product and tech, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, sometimes, right, you're going from technical perspective, you know, we need to address this. Mm-hmm. Let's say a team lead goes, you know, from the people side, we cannot for that. You know, are there any kind of situations like this that arise, right? Mm-hmm. And do they occur often? Just because, you know, you're caring for the product, but, you know, other ends of this is going like quite differently.
So I think this is supposed to come with intuition. As you work within a bigger organization, just because you're an individual contributor doesn't mean that you have to be an effective people manager and have an effective and good intuition when reading the room. Mm-hmm. You're making bigger impact, you're making larger scope decisions and trade-offs. Mm-hmm. So you have to recognize that a lot of things that you're trying to improve within an organization, they are not just technical problems, they are also culture, education, priorities problems. So you have to keep these things into account. You have to think how the people managers might see it, how other functions might see it, product, engineering, design, leadership, executive team, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So you have to think always about the incentive structure. What is the incentives for different people? And how does whatever I want to achieve fit within this overall picture? And you're going to make mistakes, and that's fine. That's how you learn. But yeah, there might be these misalignment and incentives, so you have to think about them and plan for them and be proactive in addressing them.
Okay, that makes sense. So now to like summarize what I understood, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, right? So we have team leads. So staff is on the same lead as team lead, right? So if they have, let's say, some disagreement which they cannot settle, actually they can go, you know, to director or what's above, right? And then you settle together with that. So the reporting line, like the staff doesn't belong to a team, he belongs to multiple, and that goes, you know, with his reporting line to the upper board, right?
So this again depends very much on the organization. For me, I am in a data infrastructure domain, and I'm reporting to a data infrastructure director who reports to the VP of data science and analytics. But when I approach product teams or domains about specific things and specific improvements we want to achieve, I have to be quite strategic about it. So I go to the necessary people within that domain, the leadership within that domain, I communicate with them. I also talk to decision scientists, or my teammates talk to decision scientists in those teams. We build a case, we make it sound so that it works for them, and then we empower those people, or we may build a plan. Like some of the things that we're doing at Vinted with experimentation, I think it will take us 3 years still to get to the level where we want to get. We achieved already a lot in this year, and it's really been a co-creation effort with people across the experimentation team, across all of the domains and data science function and other functions. But it's going to take a long time. So when you do that, you have to kind of keep those things in mind, the incentives that other people have, the priorities that other people have, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, you know, like, I guess we should clarify that when you meant strategic, you didn't mean political, right? Because those things, some people are mistaken, right? Because you're making political choices. You're not. You're basically figuring out the steps necessary and just talking to relevant people. Not like, you know, playing political games here. Just to clarify for the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like politics in a bad way of whatever people perceive politics to be. You just have to recognize that people have their own incentives within the organization. Engineering cares about lead time. Design cares about these things, actually user having good experience with your product. And then, I don't know, product thinks about things happening fast and having impact. Executives care about metrics improving and business growing. So you have to keep all of these things into account and recognize where that stuff you plan to do will fit. And that's just the case in the stuff that we want to do in terms of experimentation. But you might be a staff that is responsible for a particular domain. Again, you might be staff responsible for recommender system, and recommender systems can go, like the whole organization responsible for recommender system and search can go grow very large. And there might be need for a staff or multiple staffs. One staff is responsible for this, I don't know, XGBoost algorithm and really making sure that it works damn well. And recommender systems can get quite complicated. And there might be a need for deep technical knowledge there for a person who really can dig deep into these questions and figure it out. And by the way, this is kind of already us going slowly into the direction of IC archetypes. So there is this very nice book, Staff Engineer, Path Beyond Leadership Track. And they really started the book about emphasizing the different archetypes of IC roles beyond senior. And some of them are already familiar to people, like architect. This is the person who comes in and like architect stuff or whatever. And then there are problem solvers. So like I was mentioning with recommender, there might be a person who has really deep expertise with recommenders and, I don't know, build recommender at multiple companies, worked in different setups. Maybe it's a marketplace. Maybe it's just a commercial store, whatever. And they have that really deep expertise. They know what to worry about, how the stats and engineering interact, how it works with products, so they can come in and solve really difficult problems. And the different archetypes are becoming more or less important dependent at where the organization is and how big the organization is.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Since you mentioned, you know, like different archetypes and the things, I guess, you know, before we, you know, talk about like differences, you know, of staff, let's say maybe people manager, it should be like, I guess it would be for me as well interesting to understand actually what qualities you should work on in order to move, you know, from senior to the staff, right? Because actually that's the natural step.
This is a good question. It's a difficult one. I don't want to try to come up with something. There is a lot of that already said in the books. One thing that I see the most important now and what I find beneficial is that I had some people leadership experience because that helps me with thinking, okay, how do other people think? How do managers think? How do directors think? That was very useful. So we really should treat this as a bit of a kind of exploration, like go try people leadership path, then go try individual contributor path. So that's one thing. The more of that experience you get, the better. The other thing is about those trade-offs. The one of the most important things I think that people need to develop, and I need to work on that too. There's a lot for me to learn. There are different depths. There is technical depth that you can create. There is analytical depth that you can create. Then there is scientific depth that you can create. There is this very nice article on scientific depth by Variance Explained blog. And we have to do trade-offs all the time. So it's gaining that intuition as to what trade-off is okay to make now and what will hurt us later. It's gaining that intuition that I think is most important. One of the most important things.
That's true, because you're going to make a technical call on one way or another, right? And you have to figure out if you're shooting yourself in the foot now,
yeah,
or, you know, you're going to have a bazooka pointed at you, you know, later.
Yes, exactly. And kind of like, say you're designing a metric and that metric depends on some unobserved quantity. And so you will say, well, we'll use machine learning model to predict that quantity, and then we will use the outputs of this machine learning model to compute that quantity, the metric that we care for. So the intuition you want to develop there, okay, how does calibration of the model matter here? How will it affect the quantity that I'm trying to estimate? How it will interact with the imbalance in the data set? So you can make these quick calls as you're, because you want to iterate on this metric. So you will build something quick now. You want to check the most important things and then move on. Then the other thing, okay, if it's machine learning model, I want my metric to be of good quality. So when a metric moves, I want to make sure it moves for the right reasons. And not because, for example, because machine learning model is drifting. So you want to have all of these things in mind. So you will be, okay, I will build a machine learning model now. I'll implement some basic tracking of model drift, and then I will quickly be able to debug if metric is moving because it actually should be moving or because the data set is drifting because some feature was implemented that changed the way members behave and that affected the feature distribution, but it didn't have any impact on the actual quantity that I'm trying to measure. So it's gaining that intuition that is important. And then we can delve deeper into like, okay, if it's quantity that we're estimating is something binomial, like a proportion, and the confidence intervals will have very poor coverage if its quantity is very rare or if the frequency of that event is high or low. But does it matter in this case? This is the intuition you want to develop. And then another thing you can go into, like uncertainty of this model, does it matter? I don't know. Worth to double check.
Yeah, okay. That actually makes a lot of sense in this way. And since you mentioned, you know, the switch, you know, like try out, you know, if you like the people management, right? Like just try to figure out, you know, how those things work. If you like it, it's okay. You know, you can work with it. You know, if you don't, you can roll back and reuse those things. So let's talk about, you know, like from your experience, you know, what qualities, right, in your eyes is actually matching on both roles? On the staff, what helps on one or the other, right? Because we mentioned about the product. We talked about that Mm-hmm. But what others you think are overlapping as well?
So what is overlapping is definitely having people management experience. So this is overlapping between the two. You like having some experience in people management helps. And I'm already repeating here, but then I think like basic collaboration with people skills, listening to other people, making sure that people are heard. Because when you're a staff or senior individual contributor, you still want to listen what time are people having in other individual contributor roles in product teams? Because your goal is to enable them. Your goal is to make sure that they have the tooling, they have their necessary knowledge to be able to do the work that they have to do on a daily basis. And that's a similar between people manager and I think senior ICs, because you do want to be a sponsor, you do want to be an enabler of other people. There is this nice article, Always Be Quitting. And the single most important thing there they point out is to make sure that other people grow and your impact grows with you kind of writing less code because you wrote documentation or because you built a reproducible some sort of solution that other people can use so they don't have to do it again. And I guess with people management, it's similar. You want to build a process that enables people to make decisions without you. There is this nice article on Apple, Do Not Micromanage Product Strategy. And this is kind of a general advice to leadership. You don't want to be the single point of contact. You want to push ideation and decision-making to the product teams. Because as the company grows, you just won't have the scope to figure everything out. So very similar for staff. You just want to make sure that the knowledge and the technical instruments are there to kind of for you to not come back to these problems.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, you know, what also helps, right, is like you mentioned one archetype, the problem solver, right? So the same works, you know, for the people management, right? If you can solve, you know, or like help other people solve other people's problems, that's already it goes. Adjustments and actually the adaptability to ever changing needs, which actually every company goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
With people, it's always, you know, something changes, something goes, you know, like mood, you know, something in life happens, you know, you have to deal with that. Same with work. Everything changes. It's dynamic, you know, we don't sit at one place. So that works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, let's talk about communication, right? That's an interesting topic, I guess. And what differentiates more between a people manager and sometimes an IC. Could you share your experience, you know, on this?
All I'm doing nowadays is communication.
So it doesn't change on the other side, right?
No, it doesn't change on the other side. The nature of your communication maybe changes, but your communication becomes more important. So you have to be more careful about what you're saying, because you know that your communication creates a case for how things will be done. Of course, it's like we shouldn't overthink that. But the communication becomes ever more important because you want to change how certain things are done. You want to improve how things are done. You perhaps want to set an example. If you're doing analysis, you know that the analysis that you made will be referred to. Oh, well, here they've cut the corner. So if the staff cuts the corner, I can also cut the corner here. So you want to be cautious about these things. And again, not overthink them because you can make mistakes too. Just because you're more senior doesn't mean that you won't make mistakes. I make loads of mistakes and that's fine. So communicate even today at work, we were running a workshop together with Giedrius and Agnia for another product team. And we will be running a workshop for the rest of the year with every product team at Vinted to work with them on how to be the most effective at setting up hypothesis and decision support for experiment. So we want to pass that knowledge, and part of passing that knowledge is communicate.
Okay.
And there are different means of communication. So from Slack message to Google Doc to doing workshops to doing all hands presentation, all of that is within your instrument box to achieve a change that you want to achieve. And again, it depends on us archetype of the type of senior IC you are. The kind of problem that we're trying to solve now, this communication is really important, but perhaps if you're a problem solver and you come in and you solve a deep technical problem with recommender systems, then you just write out the solution, you document it, you communicate it to the team who needs to know it, and it ends there.
Okay. Yeah, okay, makes sense. So then the question about the meetings, right? How many do you have now? Less or the same, around the same?
So when you are a manager, you have usually a lot more people reporting to you. So just already having one-on-ones introduces a lot of context switching, which means you have less time and energy to focus on thinking about deeper technical things. Doesn't mean that the managers don't do it or the managers are worse at it. The managers can be excellent at these things. It's just that the people leadership scope is slightly different. For individual contributor, for my case, I do have a lot less meetings now because of the kind of changes that we are trying to achieve within the organization. I have slightly more. And I also have a decision scientist and data scientist working with me. So I have one-on-one with them every Monday. But other than that, I have the regular team ceremonies and I have usually afternoons free. Like yesterday, whole afternoon was free. Tuesday, whole afternoon was, I know Tuesday was a holiday, but I have a focus time reserved and I have that focus time for myself.
Okay, so that's nice.
But where my time does get lost now is because I have to do a lot of communication.
So from your like experience, right? Generic question. So is usually the communication the issue? Right? Where the details get lost, or you know, like different approaches were taken, like you know.
So communication is not the issue. Communication is the value.
Okay, poor communication.
Is poor communication an issue?
Does it create more depth of any way, right?
So I think there is no such thing as poor communication. There are different incentives and different things that people care for.
Okay.
And when you read someone's message, you have to recognize and realize, okay, what is it that they care for? Why are they writing the way they're writing? At least that's how I think. And then I will make my own conclusions, and then I will think, okay, how do I need to now operate to achieve together a goal with this person? My personal communication, I might write too much, but I think there is no too much writing. You should just write a lot. Yeah, but maybe I just am a fan of writing because of academic background, maybe because of that. But I mean, writing is awesome. All people should write. The best way to grow, I think, as an IC is writing. Writing documentation, writing how to do things, and enabling other people to do things without having to ask you a question on Slack. If there is a documentation, you leave a written document after yourself, and that way you kind of multiply yourself.
Can the IC path then have a KPI of like, you know, decreasing Slack messages about this topic, you know?
That's a good one. That's a good proxy. I mean, you probably don't want to go to an extent of setting up a whole ETL to measure this, but and
yeah,
then I don't
ballpark.
Yeah, you can like, okay, how many questions do we get about this? How much time we're discussing this? And yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Haven't thought about it that way.
Yeah, because you're mentioning like I'm writing documentation, how to, you know, like these things. I'm like, just to avoid, you know, the communication way. Yeah, that makes sense to put that as a metric. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, so for me, I haven't been writing as much documentation as I should. I have excellent team members who've done a lot better job at this than I have. I'm doing a lot of writing, kind of like reaching out to people, making sure that things happen and go in the direction that it should be going, and communicating, perhaps like enabling people to go and learn about certain things of experimentation, and then maybe showing the data why it should be this way, not this way, stuff like that.
Okay. So now another thought came to my mind while you were talking about this, you know. So could it be that in some way, actually a staff engineer or like, you know, multiple staff engineers could be like described as a like, let's say, some specific domain team, and like, or like an enabling team, right? Because their whole point, you know, is going to other teams, figuring out what's blocking, what doesn't work, right? And creating solution, or like teaching, or like understanding, you know, and creating some solution to help them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking is it in some companies, maybe the reason why they don't have like the staff role or like these kind of things, because they have a separate team, I think, right? Are you familiar, by the way, with team topologies?
No, I'm not.
So there's a book which has like a quite nice layout about, you know, different teams. So there are stream-aligned teams. There's complex components, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's an enabling team, which actually the whole point of that team is actually, you know, do exactly the same. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking like, maybe that's the reason, you know, because you have a team of like, you know, several people working on cross domain things,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing exactly the same, you know. So in some situations, you just have no such title, but actually the work is being done.
Maybe this is, don't know, this is a good idea. I have a strong prior, and here I'm thinking about big tech, because they do have, for example, infra team and tooling teams, but they also still have senior IC roles. So I don't know how it works out in those cases. Because you still want to have a person who kind of thinks about technical things and how they fit within a bigger picture. And within a team, you will have also people who will do stuff at a smaller scope. There is a particular problem, sure, that needs to be solved. But again, that depends on the archetype of the staff.
Yeah, that as well, a lot of like on the whole, you know, company situation. So there's mm-hmm. like multiple combinations.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Then coming from a different angle on this, I think we covered, you know, going from people manager moving to the like IC path. What about other way around?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What, let's say, if you decide, you know, go back, let's say, you know, to a management role, right, people management role, what would you think, you know, that you would need to, you know, focus more from your current role? Like, what would be the improvement points, let's say, or like, what's the different, like, you know, like with skill level, right? You have to toggle some things up, some things down.
Mm-hmm. This is a very difficult question. I don't know.
I'm not giving you easy questions, you know. I'm just picking your brain.
So,
and in your case, it's even more tougher, right? Because yeah, you were already in people management, right? And you did a switch. So what about rolling back?
No, oh, this is such a brain teaser. So I do work with two people at the moment, but they're very senior and have a lot more knowledge in many cases than I do. So I'm in a lucky position because I'm working with two quite senior people with whom, I mean, it's awesome to work with. And they know what they want. I just need to be the enabler to help them achieve what mm-hmm. they want to achieve.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe the key point. As a people manager, you become enabler, not on the technical aspects, but you become enabler on the kind of career growth and people growth aspects, and the enabler in terms of the alignment within the team. So I think that's really the answer. It's really the enabler of that alignment, and within that alignment, the enabler of the growth of people.
Okay.
Fair. But that doesn't mean that as a staff, you shouldn't worry about the growth of other people. You maybe are not going into detail of every other person, but you, at a bigger scale, you want to make sure, like, do people have the knowledge to do engineering properly or to do decision science properly?
Okay.
So maybe, and by the way, I just made up an answer on the go, so take it with a grain of salt.
Of course. So my, like, now I'm rethinking this, right? So isn't that like your kind of, like both sides, right, have leadership part in ever, right? Because they have to sway, you know, the audience way and way or another, you know, lead by example, whatever you name it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, right, you have the people management, the management part, you know, like, you know, the like the performance, you know, these kind of things. But on the other side, on the staff, you have the mentorship role where I can, you know, share the, like, also help them improve and grow. So mm-hmm. I guess that's quite so tricky because, you know, it's like you said, no easy answers. I'm like thinking this is not an easy topic in general because,
yes.
Like, what to do even, let's say, you know, if you're from the people manager, how to know if, like, I should go back to IC or not, you know, or like, you know, from IC, maybe you should try leadership and whatnot. It's complicated.
Yeah, that's why I wanted us to have this discussion. I want more people to start thinking about it. I want people to discuss it, disagree with one another, give arguments, and then reason to something that kind of to new truths for themselves.
Yeah.
And start asking them questions. Because what happens at the moment, I think, a lot in industry, like I said, people go to data analyst, data scientist, they get to senior one and then, okay, what else? Oh, well, I'll become director. Oh, I'll become a VP. But is it something you really wanted to do all your life? You went to study, I don't know, master's and undergrad in mathematics and statistics, and then you end up doing none of that. But actually, all your time, you thought, wow, I love doing linear regression. And linear regression is, by the way, an awesome model. It's way cooler than neural networks. And then maybe you wanted to do fancy linear regression all your life and you will be totally happy and you can actually get pretty deep expertise in doing linear regression. And maybe that's what you should be good at and known for in industry and be called upon by different companies. And you should have an opportunity to be that person, the linear regression person. I don't know.
Going to the extremes, right? So let's see if we're going to have some haters, like, you know?
I really like when we can enable people to be at that optimal Pareto front, like if we think two dimensions, and this is in terms of using their skills and having an impact. And you want them to be able to operate on that Pareto front. For that, you have to have the processes and you have to have the automation and the education of the general company. And when we get people on that Pareto front, this is really awesome because then people can have, like my colleague, joined Vinted, and we were reviewing variance reductions techniques for experience, and it's based on this Frisch-Wright-Lowell theorem in econometrics. And he went like, oh, I never thought that after graduate school, I will ever have to see this again. And I'm like, this is awesome. If people can have these moments, this is excellent. That means that one company has grown enough that there is harder technical problems to solve where these things become important. Two, that means there is opportunity for these people to use their knowledge. Three, I mean, I don't know, three is, let's just say it's awesome.
Yeah, but that's actually true. Like, from my, like, perspective, right, what, like, I think where, in a way, my, as well, path, you know, to the management came, you know, is that before, you know, it's like, exactly, you reached some specific role and then you have to, you know, go to the management role. And even some times ago, in order to go somewhere high up, you should have a master's degree. And, you know, so, you know, you do that as well, just because of the pressure put on you based on society.
Mm-hmm.
But that's exactly a good thing, you know, that we're seeing, you know, more of these staff roles. I see path being not a stigma anymore, right? Just because enforcing people. And as well, I think, you know, if you promote wrong person, the team lead, you're going to break him.
Yeah, I mean, what also happens, you can become a director and you have bigger scope, but you still try to solve technical problems when you really shouldn't. You should let the team to do those, like different teams, whatever the teams are reporting to. I mean, there are always exceptions to the case, but generally you want to push the ideation and the problem solving to the teams and even the making of the mistakes to the teams too. You shouldn't try to overprotect them. They need to make mistakes to be able to learn to become the ACs and the directors themselves. So you want to be like, this is, I guess, the skill of the director also comes in. You want to actively kind of, okay, am I getting involved too much? Should the people that I'm working with actually do these things themselves and figure it out on their own?
Yeah, but that's true. And I guess, you know, there's comes the advice. Read the book about the advice monster. There's like a fun book. Just don't remember exact name, but yeah, there was calling about advice monster when it creeps in, and basically just, you know, gives advice to people where they actually should themselves come up with an answer and whatnot. So that also, I guess, grows everywhere, and everyone has that advice monster, and keeping him at bay is actually a neat skill in whatever.
Yeah. And another one about the ICs is the more ICs we have across the industry, the more I think the data analysts, the data scientists will be empowered in different product teams, that actually there is growth in this path. And I think it will just give more confidence to people. Like, it's a real track, it's a real path. It's not that your end goal is become a director, it's not that your end goal is to become a team lead. You want to just grow as an expert. That's totally fine. And it's not just fine, it's actually necessary for some organizations.
Yeah. You're looking for the things that makes you happy, you know, in your day to day. If you're miserable, what's the point of then, you know, doing that? So roll back.
I have a macro theory about individual contributors and senior ICs. I would like I would like to know if there is a study about it, but I wonder if the advancement of the economy, how technically advanced it is, related to the number of ICs in the economy.
Damn, that's a good one, right? Because exactly in Lithuania, it was quite visible, right? It was more focused on the management and whatnot. And then we have the number of ICs, you know, just increasing.
Yeah. And first, we had engineering, we have the engineering architects. Now we have started to have, in the engineering, we start to see more staffs, more like different diversifications, principles, et cetera, et cetera. So when there will be more staffs in data related roles and product related roles, I think that's when we will start to see, okay, we have advanced the tech industry quite a bit in Lithuania.
Nice.
But again, this is my crazy thoughts. People, take them with a grain of salt. Please comment and give your reasons for and against.
That would be an interesting topic, right? If someone would actually do research on this, because with all of these, you know, small hunches or like ideas, you know, they don't come from nowhere, right? Like with stereotypes, right?
Yeah,
they come from specific actions just recurring from time to time, and like, oh, okay. So I guess it has some potential to be actually true.
Yeah, think about, I don't know, chip design companies, or like companies that produce equipment for designing chips or like creating chips, like ASML. Like, there are people with deep technical expertise there, principal level, staff level, who only think about how to design a machine that will manufacture chips. And like, there is a deep technical knowledge there. Or think about any big tech companies, I don't know, search at Google. I mean, there are probably some people there who have all they do is just thinking about search algorithms.
I guess, you know, the beauty of it, I don't want to call it a narrow down, right? Because itself, the term is quite deep and wide. But then you have always spend 100% of your time on one specific topic. And that's actually, you know, very, very requires very, very specific people who can actually, you know, get their focus on that kind of a level, right? I guess majority of people likes, you know, to dynamic, you know, things like, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but actually,
yeah. And again, there are archetypes. Like, there might be this problem solver type who works on a particular problem. And I've seen at the previous company I worked on, a startup, our due diligence was done by a senior scientist from Google, then DeepMind. And for 7 years at Google, all he was internal consultant, senior IC, who would go from different team to different team and work on a large, very diverse set of problems, from metric design to some sort of algorithm design, all sorts of things. And that's all what he was doing, going from one team to another team, helping solve different problems. And they were not necessarily narrowly in search, but he had good enough technical background at statistics engineering and kind of communication to be able to do that and just travel across different teams.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. And I guess, you know, there's going to be the biggest roadblock is going to be the company size and actually the need for it, right? Because then we're introducing another thing, right? The fear of changing job if you're miserable at it, right? Mm-hmm. Because some people just stay at it and just go for it for, like, you know, I don't know, 10, 20 years, you know, even they hate it. And some of them, you know, actually are trying to find a place which works for them best. So I assume, you know, not being afraid, like you mentioned, you know, experimenting and, you know, doing things, actually, you know, it's what's needed in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we should work on enabling that. We have to, like, I have to be explicit here. I was, like, recently I was doing a presentation internally about how I got where I am, about, like, career story. And I think we underappreciate the role of luck. So we need to do reflection on that as well. And that adds some humbleness, humility, don't remember the right word, to, and then that only makes us, I don't know, more inclined to help other people to discover their roles, the path for themselves. So, yeah. So, yes, we want to experiment, but we have to recognize not all people can do that. They might have different circumstances in their life, but we have to be aware of that and we have to enable them to have the safe space to experiment.
Yeah,
that's what we should be doing as, I don't know, managers, staffs, whatever.
Exactly. That's true as well, right? And that's, I guess, falls more onto the people manager because he mostly cares, you know, like, I'm not saying that no one else cares, but actually, you know, it's one of the main, you know, pillars of this is actually that that part of the, you know, the three circles which are overlapping in some way. Mm-hmm. So that actually makes sense, yeah. I guess also, you know, if he sees, you know, that there's these kind of opportunities, his role as, like, people manager actually is to get approval if needed or whatnot, right, in the company actually and push that forward.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, talking about luck, I guess also what kind of helps is actually luck itself, right? If you're at the right place at the right time, you know, like, then, you know, the sky is the limit. Otherwise, if you just, you know, got a bad hand, right, just have to, you know, play another hand.
Yeah, there is research about that on the, I think they were building a model to determine which, which feature contributes most to the person's economic well-being. And one of the most important features was what country you're born in. And you can't really control that. And that...
Oh, technically you can. You know, if you're no due date, you know, you can travel there and go for it.
But yeah, so, like, these things we have to be recognized, we have to be humble about it, and we have to enable other people to reach for their goals and help them experiment and be humble. But that's why I think we sidetracked a lot.
Yeah, but it's fine. You know, it's on the same topic, you know, and what you mentioned, right? You shared your story, right, internally. But actually, that's some one thing, you know, what I guess we're missing in the community, right? No one shares, you know, oh, I moved, you know, from leadership, you know, to the staff, to the IC path, right? Or the other way around, you know, it kind of feels like it's stigmatic, actually, to do this change.
Yes. Yes. And again, that's why I want to have this conversation. Maybe we didn't share the most kind of insightful discussion here, but maybe people will talk about this more. That's what my hope is. That's maybe more people will reflect and think, is the IC path better for me? Is the people manager path for me? And both paths are equally good. Like, you can have impact in both of them. Both of them contribute to decision-making. Both of them contribute to strategic direction. So it's totally fine to be in either of them. You just have to make a choice what suits you better.
Yep. So we're here just to plant a seed in your head, you know, and see what will sprout.
Yes, exactly. So. That's a good analogy to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, I'm not going to ask about the books because you mentioned already, you know, the Always Be Quitting like article, and you mentioned the staff engineer leadership beyond technical.
No, beyond
people. The management. Yeah.
And then there is the staff engineer's path book. And here, the key is that maybe data analyst or data scientist or decision scientist will look at it and, well, this is all for engineering. Not really. I think in the long term, in Lithuania, everywhere will have IC tracks in different companies for these roles as well. So it's good to keep these things in mind. And just reading about it gives you a bit more tools to self-reflect on your own career path. So this is nice. I would also advise to read Irrational Exuberance blog. So this is the author of Staff Engineering book, writing about different things. And he has an article there, 40 years career path, where he kind of reflects about how you optimize for the long term in your career. Sometimes we can be really... there is a strong incentives to think short term about your career. And that is good to come back to that article and rethink it and kind of reflect again, okay, am I optimizing for long term or for short term? Like sometimes you might, I don't know, optimize for higher salary. I personally prefer to optimize for the most learning I will get in different roles.
Yeah, but that's again, you know, it goes to very, very nicely, as you put, short-term strategy or long-term strategy. But that's nice. I guess I'll have to look at that article because it sounds like interesting ideas will be there.
Yeah, yeah, it has a pretty good coverage. Yeah, nice. Of different topics.
Nice. Okay, so hopefully, again, we planted a seed in your head, and we're gonna have some more discussions, or at least. Well, we're going to see, you know, long term, you know, some changes in at least Lithuania's, you know, landscape of IC roles. And thank you, Jeff, for having this talk with me.
Thanks for having me.
It was really fun, you know, like hearing your movement part, right? And hearing your ideas on the this whole narrative. So thank you again. And for the listeners, see you in the next episodes.
Just one comment.
Okay.
One final comment. All what I've said is just my subjective opinion. Please read the material online.
I'll add this, you know, as a preview, you know, of this whole episode.
Yeah,
you
and
know,
my opinion might change because I grow as well. Like, this is just, just putting it out there.
Okay, so thank you for listening and tune in to the next episode.
Yeah, thanks.